Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of free Washington, Spokane Valley. Once again, brought to you by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea Republican in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And once again, this is the year we make freedom a reality because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Jeremiah 6:16 reminds us, stand at the crossroads and look, ask for the ancient paths, ask where the good way is, and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. And once again, I want to remind everybody out there, this election, the media is doing its best right now to get you to be so despondent and so untrusting of everyone that you just don't want to participate. You just don't want to have anything to do with it. And that's intentional. But the fact of the matter is, there are good people running for office, especially at the state and local level, who are committed to turning the republic in the right direction, restoring a God-honoring constitutional republic, and who need your help. And the National Republican Party has not done itself any favors, but particularly the National Republican leadership, specifically Speaker Paul Ryan, not doing itself any favors by making fun of the grassroots or ignoring the grassroots or saying that people just don't know what they're doing and that the establishment, like throwing it in their face. Well, how do you like it now that Trump said all these things and we're just going to throw it in your face? That's meant to discourage you. It's meant intentionally to make it so you feel like there's no hope. There's no way out. You can't trust anybody. When in fact, there are a lot of good folks out there. And there are a ton of people that want to put their lives on the line, want to sacrifice their time to turn the republic around. And we're going to talk about this a little bit today and a little bit later in the show too, because this is all part of a game, and the mainstream media intentionally smear. In fact, if somebody's being attacked by the mainstream media, that is almost the 100% endorsement of that candidate for constitutional conservatives, for real. The people that they smear and they lie about and they attack the most are the ones that are the most effective and the ones that scare them the most. In other words, scare the socialists and the communists the most. And that's why this stuff is happening. And people don't realize that it is that intentional. Yes, it is that intentional. They want you to be discouraged. They want you to despair. They want you to ignore your duty as the government, because we are the government of the people. And your duty as Christians to allow the Holy Spirit to work through us so Jesus Christ can be preached and his gospel can be preached to all nations and disciples can be made of all nations. It's really interesting to me, the more I have seen this over the last 8 years in politics, the more true it is. When the media attacks somebody, that's the person you probably should vote for. It really is almost universally true, unless they just don't need you anymore, and that's why they're trying to get rid of you. Well, that brings us to your daily intelligence briefing and the international front. I want to talk about a couple things that are happening in the news right now, and first we're going to start with ISIS. There is a report that came out of England by The Sun. It says there was some sort of a secret deal where America was plotting to allow 9,000 ISIS fighters to escape Mosul. And if you haven't been following the news, there is a planned attack on Mosul to retake it from ISIS. And anyway, this report says that these 9,000 ISIS fighters would be allowed to escape the terror capital, Mosul, so they can attack Russian troops in Syria. And it's the fact of the matter is, right now, that the Middle East is a powder keg. And you have different foreign countries trying to infiltrate and use proxies in the Middle East against each other. Folks, this is almost the Cold War all over again, because boiling it down in its simplest form, in the 1960s and 70s, in his book Disinformation, General Mihai Pachipa, the highest-ranking defector to the United States, was a KGB defector. He lays out how they infiltrated a lot of the terror groups in the Middle East, the KGB did. Talking like the Muslim Brotherhood, you're talking the Palestinian Liberation Organization, you're talking all of these organizations that were infiltrated intentionally by the Soviets, okay? Now, all these years later, the United States, and it initially started when the Soviets invaded Afghanistan, the United States tried to infiltrate groups there as proxies against the Soviets. And we're successful. There's an entire book written about it called Charlie Wilson's War, and you can read about it. And the Russians had to pull out of Afghanistan. Well, it seems like what we're seeing all over again in the Middle East is this proxy war, where the United States is trying to infiltrate on one side, you know, this al-Nusra front, which, by the way, they've admitted that they are with ISIS. And then on the other side, you got the Soviets and their proxies in Syria and some of these other terror groups. Now, it's kind of roughly aligning Sunni versus Shia, roughly. But in the Middle East, there is this misnomer that Sunnis hate Shia, Shia hate Sunni. I have met so many people that you'll have one person is a Sunni that married a Shia or vice versa. In fact, a sheikh I worked with over there, he was Shia, married a Sunni. Another person I knew, I know right now, actually, he's a Sunni, married a Shia. And so it's not as cut and dry as you might think it is, okay? Just and the media does a horrific job of trying to paint this. But generally and roughly what you have is an alignment on the United States side, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and there's a couple of smaller Middle Eastern countries, but on the Sunni side. And then on the Russian side, you've got the Alawites, which is the minority, but the governing minority in Syria, and then also the Shia in Iran as well, which is predominantly Shia. So you kind of, and also the southern part of Iraq. So you have this split, and again, it's very general, but that's what's going on right now. And what we're seeing with some of these reports coming out about deals being made on either side, that might be true. There might be deals being made so that these proxies, again, can be buffers in what is really a reemerging Cold War between the United States and Russia. And it's interesting that the report about this terror deal came from a source in Russia. Okay? So the military source in Moscow is who told these reporters about this allegedly brokered deal. And it gets even more interesting that the next thing on the international front is in Yemen, where the Houthi minority, which again is Shia predominantly minority, which is fighting a civil war. It's been a protracted civil war there in Yemen for it's just been very violent, and for you know, a lot of different reasons this has occurred. But again, the Saudis are on one side, the Iranians are on another, and these proxies are in the middle. Well, the Houthis actually, as part of this, fired missiles at a U.S. destroyer. And that now has provoked, I mean, this is like shades. It happened twice, apparently. It's probably happened more than that, but what we have now, the information is twice. And it's like a Gulf of Tonkin all over again. The United States now has engaged the Houthis with limited strikes in Yemen after those missile attacks. In response to that, Iran now has deployed destroyers of its own into that same body of water and same area. Folks, this is a powder keg. What if the Iranians try to attack a U.S. ship? Then we have war with Iran? All of this is very interesting, and if you haven't heard about this, ultimately, boiling it all down, it's renewed confrontation with Russia is what's happening and what's building. There was an alleged cable that was sent out for Russian diplomatic personnel to pull their children back to Russia, which, honestly, if they pulled the diplomats back, that would be a more significant indicator, in my opinion, of a looming military confrontation. But it was done to be dramatic. And again, underscore the fact that there is a huge, huge building powder keg between the U.S. and Russia. And Syria is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, the U.S. cut off all communications in regards to negotiations with the Russians about how to beat ISIS. So keep your eye on it. Things are really kind of right before our election. Anything could happen. And there are forces out there that will intentionally try to manipulate us through disinformation and misinformation. And we have to be very, very careful about it, because the American people, and especially the people that live in the American readout, are a bastion of freedom that the globalists fear. Which brings us to the National Front and this election. Let's talk about Donald Trump. Now, there are this tape mysteriously surfaced. And I got to back up. So every election cycle, I get brutally attacked by the media. And they always try to gin up a story. They make it up out of nothing, or they blow something up out of proportion or whatever. This year, they just flat out tried to make something up that just was a non-story to begin with. In fact, by their standards, there would be a lot of people suing the Spokesman Review, the Socialist Review, or the Insulander, based on the standards that they tried to put in some of their articles. So anyway, the point is this, that it should be no surprise to anybody that this, you know, tape surfaces right before the elections, and it should be no surprise that there are people inside the Republican Party who are now saying, oh, we just need to abandon Trump. We need just to throw him under the bus. We need to get rid of him. We need to fold. This is all red herring stuff, and it is all misdirection. All misdirection. I mean, Hillary Clinton, by all accounts, should be being prosecuted and very likely in jail right now. Bill Clinton, who had many different reports against him, should be prosecuted. And so, and everybody listening is probably thinking, well, you know, this just doesn't make any sense. There's no logic to it. Yes, there is no logic and there is no reason. It's politics. And what they're trying to do is make you so discouraged and despair at the national level that you just don't participate at all and don't vote down ticket, where you can have a huge impact at the state and local level. Huge impact. And this election is really about two things: globalism versus nationalism. And globalism versus nationalism, at the center of this, I am a nationalist. I believe in America. I love America. I love the Constitution, like many of you do. I love Jesus Christ, and I'm not ashamed to say it everywhere I go, like many of you. And so with Trump, what really they're trying to do is discredit the idea of nationalism. And he happens to be the poster boy for it. They're trying to discredit this idea of nationalism, this idea that America is a great country, that we do have great ideas. We do have a great people. They're trying to discredit that entire idea, because if they can discredit it, they can continue to destroy America, and they can continue to run it into the ground, like some of these socialists and communists have intentionally sought out to do. So take a look again at this situation, not as this micro analysis of him, but take a look at it in the bigger context of what is actually happening right now. They are trying to do everything they possibly can to prevent the rise of nationalism. And I mean nationalism in the best sense of that word. Pride in country, charity to all nations, jobs here instead of going overseas, unshackling the American spirit. They are trying to destroy nationalism and the rise of nationalism in America, because if it catches on in America, it will catch on in other places of the world, and the globalists then lose control. This is about money and power. It always is. You got to follow the money. You got to follow the power. Which now brings us to another point on the national front. Judge Roy Moore suspended. Why? Because he stood up on principle and said, no, we believe in the rule of law. I believe the sanctity of marriage. Believe in Jesus Christ. And that just can't stand with the globalists and the socialists and the communists. And so they suspended him. And meanwhile, also on the national front, America trust in the media is at an all-time low. Barna, in particular. And the reason it's at an all-time low is because people aren't believing that there is just an objective reporting of the news, but there's actually an agenda that is being driven. And again, nobody would be making excuses for Donald Trump or what he said, but you have to take it in the context that good people who make mistakes, okay, good people are smeared every election cycle in this country, and no one really says much about it. And the reason they're smeared is because they believe in the Constitution, meaning what it says. They believe in fighting against the socialist and communist rise here in America. And that's why they're being smeared by the media. And people are kind of starting to get this. And by the Barna survey, they are starting to get this. That the media has an agenda to not have good people elected. Okay? Or at least people that are going to change things back toward a constitutional republic. That is what is happening. And if you understand that from the macro level, then you can understand what happened to Donald Trump. And it's not excusing anything he said, but all of a sudden this attack happens right before the elections, and you know the globalists are just hounding him. Because right now, the best chance of survival for a constitutional republic is through somebody who's going to be a nationalist and who is going to follow the Constitution. Now, it remains to be seen whether Donald Trump would do that. But we definitely know that Hillary Clinton won't do that, because she has an entire history in politics of not following the Constitution and of intentionally targeting political opposition and intentionally and with malice aforethought, going after our God-given unalienable rights and making us believe that we can give them up, or we don't need to fight for them, or that government actually can take them away. So we know that on her side. And that's where this misdirection is, I think, coming from the media. And one of the reasons American people, again, have such a low trust of them. Which brings us to the next thing on the occupation of the Department of Interior. Now, you have this trial going on down in Moeller, Oregon right now. All right? You have this trial happening about some people occupying buildings in the middle of nowhere. And yet, there were activists who occupied the actual Department of Interior building on the East Coast, 40 of them. You don't hear them getting arrested or going to trial. Don't hear any of them being shot or stopped at a dead man's roadblock or shot at as they approach one. Not hearing any of that. Media isn't mentioning that, because they can get away with this kind of stuff. Rioting, violence, everything that is coming from the left, and then people that occupy peacefully, not one shot fired, peacefully, are the ones on trial. Which brings us to another part of misdirection that's happening on the national front. That's the North American Energy and Infrastructure Act. A lot of people have missed this, But the fact of the matter is, this is the continuing theme of ceding authority and jurisdiction to third-party entities like non-governmental organizations, you know, these committees, environmentalist organizations, ceding jurisdiction and ceding authority to them over water and property rights. And this North American Energy Security and Infrastructure Act has a great sounding title, but again, hidden in the actual language is a giveaway. And this goes along with the consent decrees that are happening in cities all over America, where you have these lawsuits that come forward, the city settles, and they cede jurisdiction as part of a consent decree away from that city or county. Which brings us now to the regional front and the Columbia River Treaty. If you have not heard about this, the whole Columbia River Basin and the treaty being reopened to renegotiate so that there can be more regulation over water use in the Columbia Basin. There can be more regulation over property use in the Columbia Basin. Keep track of this. I had a big meeting today with some folks, attorneys, elected officials, and we were discussing the implications of what is happening. Everything from limiting or metering your well water, limiting the actual amount of water you can use, even though there really truly has not been any impact on the aquifer here, hasn't dropped a single inch in 100 years. And what they do is they take the science and they actually have their own people who are, quote, experts on this. These are bureaucrats, okay? Or they do not intentionally use an expert in that field. I should say and or. So what happens, you have a hydrologist, for example, his or her entire job, okay, is to figure out underground water sources, how it's calculated, how much water is flowing, all that kind of stuff, right? And they don't use somebody like that. So they use one of their experts, and lo and behold, their expert says that the footprint of water, the actual amount, physical amount of water, is smaller than it actually is. So if you have less water, then there's less water to allocate to other people, and you can control development. Then the other way that they do this is they'll measure something called in-stream flow. So for example, the Spokane River, they measure the in-stream flow as it's coming in from Idaho, and then they measure after the river actually goes into the aquifer. And a lot of people don't know that. The river actually goes into the aquifer, okay? And obviously, the flow is going to be slower. There's going to be less water because some of it's been diverted into the aquifer. Then they use that number, okay, to say that this is the actual in-stream flow for the river. This is the actual physical amount of water in the river. Even though downriver farther, the river actually has a place where the aquifer comes into the river and the flow increases. They don't measure there. And so that's how water rights are being controlled. So this Columbia River Treaty seeks to reopen a lot of this stuff, and the methodology by which water is calculated should impact all of us dramatically, because if you can control water, you can control people, right? So keep your eye on the Columbia River Treaty. And we're going to be reaching out to some farmers and ranchers. And if you're listening to this show today, just reach out to me via Facebook or text message and let me know if you want to be a part of this. We're going to get some property owners, ranchers, farmers, local elected officials together so we can fight this, because it is really kind of sneaking in the back door and we need to stop it. And ultimately, too, this might lead to the removal of dams, okay? Because obviously we need to increase the flow of water. All right. Or not obviously. All right. Also on the regional front, there was the hack of the fish and game system. Many of you got letters in the mail that the fish and game system would be hacked. And I want to give you a perspective on that. What better way to find out who all the people are that own guns than to hack the database by which permits are issued for hunting and fishing? Think about that for a second. So if you got one of those letters, kind of keep that in the back of your mind. It probably isn't an identity theft risk, although they did send a letter that said if there is a problem, there's a company that will help you. It's probably more of a foreign intelligence agency gaining an idea of how many true Americans are out there that hunt and fish, who have firearms, and are, I guess, impliedly trained to use them. Also, on the regional front, the Bundy trial, a couple highlights out of there. Mark McConnell and Terry Linnell, now outed as cooperating federal informants in testimony. The feds literally sent people into groups, apparently Oath Keepers. They tried to monitor Oath Keepers, sent this lady in to listen to it, apparently paid her like $100 a meeting or something. I don't have the exact details, but paid her amount of money to go attend meetings and report back. And interestingly enough, part of the report back was that there wasn't really a lot of information of any nefarious activity. So that's kind of ironic. But they do send people into normal organizations that are frequented by veterans, like Oath Keepers, to keep tabs on us. Now, you would think, instead of spending money on that, maybe we could spend money on, oh, I don't know, preventing the next terrorist attack in America? From jihadis, maybe? Unreal. On the local front, Spokane Valley fighting back against the Attorney General and really, really doing a great job with this sanctuary city for the Second Amendment. And this idea of, hey, look, if the Attorney General of Washington State tries to introduce this thing to ban so-called assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, there will be a place in Washington State that is a sanctuary for the Second Amendment, for the right to bear arms. If you get a chance, could you email those guys? They're very easy to look up on Spokane Valley website. Just send them an email and say, hey, we support you. Or send them a text message, give them a phone call. Even if you think they already know that you support them, do it anyway and encourage them. And help them know how many people out there really are behind what they're doing, because it's emboldening other cities across the country, including on the East Coast, to do the same thing. So we need to stick together here. And this is something I think that is so critical. The line in the sand for me is the Second Amendment. It is the right to bear arms. And I'm sure it is for many of you. On the local front as well, a storm, big storm coming, gusts of up to 50 miles an hour, and some say it might be more, coming here over the next 24 hours. So if you haven't done those final winterization plans, it'd be a good idea to finish that up. Also on the local front, yours truly received the endorsement, contrary to all of the negative media out there on TV and on the radio and in print, received the endorsement of the Washington Association of Police and Sheriffs. 4,500 members, rank and file, law enforcement officers across the state of Washington, received their endorsement for, quote, my support of local law enforcement. And I'm really humbled and honored to have that, and that really is a kind of rebuttal of the media narrative that is going on out there right now. Also, and lastly, on the local front, interesting, we've been talking about the Peace Justice Action League of Spokane, the communist leader, Communist Party USA leader that came in as a keynote speaker in 2015, Judith LeBlanc, and then how they brought in the Council of American Islamic Relations in 2016. Well, now two members that are associated with PJALs, apparently one of them was arrested for holding up a train, literally arrested for stopping a train. And you didn't hear about that in the media, I'm sure, because that would go against their narrative, wouldn't it? But the fact remains that PJALs and people associated with them are doing these types of things, and you just don't hear about it from Sean Vestal, do you? So it's important to know that this is happening in our own backyard, and another reason we need to be participating, and that's a briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for us. Thank you to all our friends and family out there that have been sending well wishes. And if you get a chance and you haven't done so already, go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US and like the page, share it with your friends and family. And remember, this is a listener-supported show, and you can go to VoteShea.com, and you can donate there and help us stay on the air and keep the truth coming out and reporting on the things that the media doesn't or won't report on. Well, it's my pleasure to introduce my good friend Glenn Morgan, who has been a freedom fighter for a long time and doing a lot of things with the Citizens Alliance for Property Rights and We the Governed. Just a great, great human being. Glenn, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today. How are you doing, my friend?
Well, Matt, thank you so much for having me, and I'm just excited to be here.
Well, so what is your I just want to get your take, because everybody's talking to me about that. What is your take on what's happening at the national level? I mean, it just seems like a ongoing circus, you know, intentionally trying to misdirect everybody. What's your take?
You know what? I was listening to what you were saying before you had me on the air, and I really couldn't agree with you more. I mean, as you know, I wasn't a I was a Cruz guy really during the primary, but at the same time, you know, listen, for Trump, for all his faults, I don't think it's difficult to be able to compare the two and recognize that, you know, Clinton is clearly the, you know, the road to hell, and not even paved with good intentions in this case. But, and obviously anybody that doesn't fit the narrative is going to be attacked. It doesn't make those people perfect people. It doesn't mean they're angels, and good Lord, this, you know, Trump is certainly far from that, but you know, the question, I guess, that brings you is what's going to actually happen. And boy, I don't know that anybody can predict what the outcome is going to be in this case. It's so difficult. You know, I tend to try to focus more on local and state issues, but at the national level, I just cannot tell you what's actually going on. It is it is strange days on the election front. But you know, the other side will tell you what they're afraid of if you listen to them. And they clearly are afraid of Donald Trump.
You know, it's interesting. If you just take raw numbers, take all the emotions and stuff out of it, you know, who are the new voters and what's the percentage? Here in Spokane County, I was told it was an increase of new voters of something like 20%. And in some places, you're looking at 5 to 8% increase in new voters, which is a dramatic turn. And most of those people were voting for Trump. So it seems like that number is not being accounted for in all of the kind of election predictions that are out there. But one thing I think is clear that we can say with certainty, and that is people are just fed up with the status quo. I mean, I see it and hear it every day, and I'm sure you do too.
Yeah, no, and I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, that's just and you know, there was that recent USA Today survey reported on it, and you might have already talked about this before, but the number one fear of Americans, the 60% of Americans fear more than anything else is corrupt government. And, you know, it's the second year in a row that that's been the category that Americans are most afraid of. Even ahead of a jihadi attack, even ahead of war, natural disaster, it's a fear of corrupt government. And, you know, it's very understandable that that's becoming a dominant fear, because the bigger government gets, they cannot help themselves, but they do abuse the citizens over whom they rule, and that's exactly how they act. And so, you know, we the people are becoming we the governed, because that's how we're being treated, and we're allowing this scenario where government becomes the end-all, be-all to everything, and the nature of bureaucracy is to perpetuate itself. It has to grow like a disease and spread, and as it gets bigger, it has to, by default, abuse us in that process. And the more people that get harmed by government, you know, they experience it, they tell their friends, other people see it, and it obviously creates just an incredible, you know, concern out there. And I think that's starting to show up in a lot of these surveys, and, you know, not just in the circles that you travel as you go around the state, but just you can see it on a national level. And I think it's going to have an effect in these elections. I can't tell you what it's going to be exactly, but it certainly seems to be having an effect. And when I know, when I go talk, you know, you probably haven't talked about Seattle much lately, but you look at the insanity coming out of Seattle, where for the first time, I think that hundreds of thousands of Seattle residents are suddenly discovering the merit of property rights, because the Seattle City Council is considering basically giving homeless people the ability to come in and squat and basically declare eminent domain on parks and front yards at any place they want to in the city of Seattle, and forcing people to go through an arduous eviction process of some heroin addict that's just going to show up in your front yard and park a meth lab or something else. And suddenly property rights are being rapidly discovered in the city of Seattle. And just last night I was there reading about they had 10,000 people sign a petition to oppose this ridiculous ordinance. And this, you know, to some, I just don't know what some of these political leftists really think, that yeah, at some point in time, they're going to wake up, even in the heart of darkness of Seattle, they're going to wake up some people to the dangers of their freedoms being stolen overnight. And this is just this craziness that is we're really seeing it manifest itself in some really strange ways around the state.
Well, I do find that very curious. It's like, you know, 8 years ago, it was a rarity for politicians to kind of get attacked on a you know, a real personal level consistently. I mean, you get attacks once in a while, but consistently attacked, it was kind of a rarity. But for individual people, landowners, property owners, to be attacked by government, subjected to audits and all that kind of thing, it was really a rarity. And now, today, when you say, well, you know, I'm a victim of government abuse, you know, people are coming out of the woodwork. So am I. Here's my story. Here's my story. Here's what happened to my friend or my uncle or my aunt or my son or daughter or my mom or dad. And I think that the internet has helped to bring that together, that you're not alone with some of the things that are happening, and that these concerns, you know, 60%, as you said, are valid. If you could give some examples, and I've never asked you this before, Glenn, how have you been attacked, or what stories do you have of people having their property rights attacked and, you know, stand out in your mind?
Yeah, you know, and I think I'm going to echo what you said there too, Matt, about that the internet, it's not just the internet, but the ability to project video. And because video has the ability to communicate a lot more information in a shorter period of time in a lot more emotional way. And so because of that, now with the power of the internet, YouTube, you know, the ability to actually put up a video and produce a video, you can actually in 3 to 5 minutes explain a very emotional, personal story about somebody being abused by government. We used to rely on the media to do that, but unfortunately the mainstream media wants to spend time praising government more often than they spend time exposing what government's doing. And so, but now that's been one of my causes over the last few years, has just been telling today. I've called it a Tale of the Tyranny series. I started it when I was at the Freedom Foundation. I've continued it with CAPR. I had a story that I just did out of Whatcom County of the Cross family being charged by the Department of Ecology for the potential to pollute. No evidence of any pollution of any kind, because on their 3-acre property with no water, no wetlands, no stream nearby, but the Department of Ecology decided their one horse and their one llama had the potential to pollute the watershed, and was coming down on them with all these regulatory threats of fines and harassment, and using the conservation district as kind of a stalking horse to go in there and force them to spend a bunch of money. And I did a video, and it's up. You can see it on YouTube under We the Governed. I ran it through that site, but it's a CAPR video, the Citizens Alliance of Property Rights, and it's about the Cross family and what they've experienced. And Department of Ecology harassed these people until their horse was dead, and that was the only thing that satisfied the Department of Ecology, was the animal dying. And so, you know, and this is coming, this is, they're doing this to people all over the state. We've seen this with ranchers in eastern Washington. But in this case, what they seem to be doing is taking, you know, 50 to 100 property owners at a time, and then they file these complaints on them and harass them until they either put their animals down, move their animals away, or comply with some very expensive and complex farm plan that the department, that the conservation district imposes. These are real people suffering a ridiculous and pointless abuse by an agency that is doing not a thing to help the environment, but everything to justify its existence.
You know, it does seem to be this continued, we're going to do anything we can to justify our positions, even if it's destroying good Americans, their property rights, their livelihoods, as long as we keep ourselves intact. And, you know, it really marks, I don't know if you've read this before, but there is a great 26-page book by Sir John Glubb about the fate of empires. And he talks about one of the marked turns is away from self-sacrifice to selfishness. And it really seems like a lot of these agencies are kind of embodying this. There's good people that work there. I know there are, because they're whistleblowers. But it seems really like, as a general rule, there is this marked selfishness. Protect my position. Who cares what happens to everybody else?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm seeing it more and more, particularly among senior management at these agencies. What I find is there's a lot of good people that work there at lower levels, And they go in, and they either get demoralized with the process, and they realize if I just keep my head down and don't accomplish too much, I can have a career in government. Or if they decide they want to be rapacious and take advantage of the situation, they have to become one of these abusers, and that means they need to justify their existence, increase their budget, and those are the people who unfortunately tend to rise to the top in a lot of these agencies. Again, there's always exceptions, but this seems to be the trend, and it's worse now, not just at even the state and federal level, but you even see it in the local government. And I'd spent the last 2 days meeting with a whistleblower, and the story that this whistleblower had about the abuse that they suffered at the hands of their and really this whistleblower was simply trying to comply with the Public Records Act and the truth, and to watch them lose their job, to be harassed, to be driven away, to threaten the other employees to not talk about it, it's nothing. I don't think people realize just how bad this really is, and it's very destructive. You know, you mentioned before I came on the air, you were talking about this in-stream flow rule and the water rights issue, this Hearst decision that you might have talked to the state Supreme Court. You know, it's basically making, in effect, exempt wells, rural property owners making exempt wells illegal. Despite the fact that in that case, even in our worthless Supreme Court, where most of the 9 justices have struggled with understanding the plain language of the law, even there, several of them wrote a dissent. And the first sentence in that dissent is that there is nothing in the plain written letter of the law to justify the decision that this court has come to. And what it means is that the rule of law is greatly devalued when you have a lawless Supreme Court or judges or bureaucrats simply operating regardless of what the law says. They have an agenda and they're going to push it, and it doesn't matter what the truth is. And it doesn't matter what the legislature says. It doesn't matter what is written. We are going to determine major things that are going to have a huge impact and destroy lives and futures and fortunes and generational impacts. And we aren't going to follow the law. It leads to a terrible situation where people begin to have total lack of respect for the law because they know it doesn't mean anything anymore. And there's a lot of problems, and this is not a good thing for our state, not a good thing for our society, and it's just, we have got to get it under control.
We do, and I don't think some of the justices in the Supreme Court, in their infinite wisdom, understand the dramatic damage that they are causing with not just simply a lack of, you know, predictability, but literally undermining the rule of law themselves by just making up decisions on a whim, or, you know, in the case nationally, I guess, of allowing people that probably should be prosecuted and put in jail. If it was a normal American doing the same thing, they would have been prosecuted and put in jail. And we have this idea of government above the law, and it's being, unfortunately, it's really being... That idea is being supported, I don't think overtly, but certainly through their decisions, when they ignore the law like that. And, you know, yeah, McCleary is a perfect example, too.
Yeah, McCleary is another good example. I mean, this first decision, I just noticed it because I find it difficult that somebody who understands English, at least as a primary language, and that could ever read the statute and what the legislature has written and interpret it to mean exactly the opposite of what's written, for whatever excuse they may have. And, you know, one time years ago when I started, I wasn't as well-known politically as an activist. I went to a realtor's dinner one time in Thurston County. I sat next to a judge who I didn't know, and she didn't know me. And I asked her why she became a judge, and she told me that her goal in being a judge was to promote the progressive agenda. And it wasn't to follow the rule of the law or anything else. And I wasn't as assertive back then as I would be now. It's a troubling statement to hear that from a judge. And I'm constantly reminded of what that judge told me when I see decisions like this. And the fact that it begins to erode the respect of the rule of law and the average citizens, because most people are going to realize that there's something dramatically wrong here. And unfortunately, that seeds, it really sows a harvest that we don't want to have in this country, where the rule of law no longer means anything. And it's a real problem, and I just can't overstate it enough that that we really have to get this under control. And obviously, you traveled to the heart of darkness during the legislative session and are involved in those negotiations for legislation and bills and attempting to fix and hold back some of these problems and address them. But, boy, you have a lot of work in front of you in the legislature to try to bring some of the stuff under control.
Yeah, that's kind of an understatement, you know.
Yeah,
but
you know,
honestly, you know, the more I think about it, you know, we all actually, by our own individual actions, either support the rule of law or support its degradation. And you know, that really kind of goes back to us being we the governed. You know, instead of we the people, the government of the United States, right? We should be insisting on the rule of law in all levels of government. And if we came together as the people, we would be able to do that. So if you could, and this is Matt Shea on Patriot Radio with Glenn Morgan of We the Governed. Glenn, if you could give some examples of what it actually is happening on the west side of the state where people are becoming government of the people again.
You know, I think some of the better examples that I've seen, and it kind of varies time and time again, but I do want to point out there should be hope, and people should recognize that people are starting to rise up in different areas. I'll give you a couple examples. Grays Harbor is a good example where, and it's not always a partisan thing. As you know, there's good Republicans, and there's Republicans who seem to have lost their way. There's every now and then you find a good Democrat even, but most of them have entirely lost their way at this point in time. Out in the Grays Harbor area, I'm going to point out that for the first time since the Roosevelt administration, 30s, there's not going to be a single Democrat on that county commission. The only Democrat commissioner that was left decided to go out and spend his time in between committee meetings stealing his opponent's signs, and he got caught on a game camera. And it's made the news out there, and he's not been doing too well in the primary anyway. And for the first time, there isn't going to be a single Democrat in office in that county. And for the first time since the 1930s, Pacific County looks like they're going to elect a Republican in their county commission. And in Thurston County, where I'm at, even there, Heart of Darkness with the City of Olympia and the Capitol and all these government agencies, it looks like we're going to have a majority commission that doesn't have, at least it's majority controlled by independents instead of Democrats, again, for the first time probably since the Eisenhower administration. These are indications of significant political change occurring at a local level, and that does start to trickle up to the legislature and into other areas, and it's a good sign. I mean, people are really rising up and confronting government. And in King County, you know, in addition to the example I had out of Seattle with these homeless, the silliness of the homeless, King County, this last summer, we had 1,500 people show up at a couple of meetings to oppose King County Health Department's attempt to impose what we were calling the turd tax. It was septic fees on septic systems. And last week, activists from CAPR, Citizens Alliance for Property Rights, we went down and dug through all the files in the King County Health Department that they had filed on complaints claiming that there were thousands of failing septic systems, only to find that the claims being made by senior staff were entirely false and not based on truth. Even their own data showed that a truly failed septic system was a very rare event, and out of 85,000 in King County in a 14-year window period of time, they had only had a few hundred that had actually failed and had to be dealt with. But they were using that as their excuse, claiming that there was massive pollution events all over so they could justify a new tax. And as that's being exposed, it's really helping to drive the citizen involvement and recognizing that we can push back, and that people showing up at those public hearings, it does make a difference. Even in King County, they backed down and decided not to pursue that idea.
You know, I really am encouraged. Now, here in Spokane Valley, you know, we had some socialists on the council. They're all gone now. Good constitutional conservatives are on the council and have kept the socialists out. And there's some people that, you know, it was kind of sad, actually, and I'm sure you've experienced this on that side of the mountains. They didn't even know that some of these people were of a bigger government, higher taxes, socialist mindset, and they still try to defend them, even though they claim, you know, themselves to be very conservative, just because they don't have the information, or they or they're under misinformation or disinformation. How have you, through your website, broken through that to get to those folks that, you know, you're not preaching to the converted, you're actually reaching out into new demographics and educating them? How have you done that?
You know, one of the ways that we do that, and we try to do that with CAPR as well, is we go into communities where we don't feel comfortable necessarily, where you would think that, boy, that community is super liberal, or there's, you can't find a conservative anywhere. Those are communities where it's our mission field. We are going out there to convert them to a smaller government, more conservative perspective on what's happening. And one of the ways of doing that is writing articles and stories about issues in those types of environments. Property rights is oftentimes perceived as kind of a rural issue more than it is an urban issue. And yet that person who owns a house in a little house on a postage stamp lot in Seattle is just as concerned about their property and keeping their property up as somebody who lives on a 300-acre ranch in Stevens County. It's really the same concern, and they just don't realize it until it's so clearly threatened, as it is in Seattle right now, by the city council and by this homeless scam that they're trying to run. And suddenly, that's when there's a discovery that property rights isn't for somebody, just an obscure issue for somebody else. It's for me, and it's my freedom, too. And that's where we must reach out to people who disagree with us, or who live differently than we do, or who live in the city if we live rurally, people who have who you might think from the outside that you're not going to have a lot of common ground. You will find common ground, and we all have to live here in this country together, and we must find be able to communicate with them effectively, breaking through this, you know, sense of, oh, you're a Democrat or Republican, but there's basic issues of freedom and liberty that we can find in common across the political spectrum and across an urban-rural divide, or whatever racial divide, or whatever divide that somebody wants to artificially create. And it just requires us to be active and engaged and tell those stories and talk to them and find out what's going on there. And it's an endless, a timeless sort of process. It's not something that you suddenly break through and it's the clouds part and the rainbows come out and suddenly there's birds, you know, bluebird butterflies and sunshine. It's really the grind that we're in right now, and we have to push back and we have to do it, and we can't give up or be depressed. I've never read anything in literature where our founding fathers, or in the Bible, or any other place like that, where it says it's time to surrender, go ahead and give up. It's about fighting on, even when it seems difficult or challenging.
And you've actually done this. I mean, you want to talk about the heart of darkness. I mean, you were at Columbia University. You know, that was the heart of darkness for a while. Still is, in many respects. What would a message be for people that are in that environment, like young people particularly, who are in a heart of darkness like that, who feel just completely overwhelmed? What would be your message to them?
I would say that speak truth to power, question authority, and don't be afraid to be bold. I think that to the bold comes victory. And the other side expects us to cower in fear and hide and put our heads down and go along with the flow. That's what they want to do. And they do that through intimidation and other tactics. And if you're fearless, and you're willing to stand up and confront them wherever they are about whatever issue, it doesn't mean picking stupid fights, but if you can pick, you know, you get to pick the issues you want to stand for and fight about, you can oftentimes gain many people who will come to your side that you had no idea supported you or believed in what you were doing, and you will find allies in strange places and in much greater numbers than you ever imagined, but it requires people to stand up in the first place. And once you start to do that, that's how you get a movement. That's how you get a following. That's how you get fellow supporters. And you'll find other people that realize, hey, if you can do it, I can do it too. And that's the only path that I see. And my recommendation, again, is, you know, be educated. Don't do silly things, but find something. And also, don't be afraid of using humor. Humor is a universal feeling that people have no matter what they believe politically. And when you can find ways that you can attract people to your movement or your issue or your subject by using humor and satire and all kinds of other different techniques, and I think it works really well.
Amen. Well, in the last 30 seconds, if you could plug your web address and where people can go to get more information about you or get a hold of you.
I would say if anybody's out there, go and join the Citizens Alliance for Property Rights. It's the only organization that focuses on property rights in Washington State and elsewhere. It's the website is caper.us. Please go there. Please join and read about what we're doing. And if you're interested in just some of the other articles I've written on my own at wethegoverned.com, and it's spelled like it sounds, and you can read about various whistleblower stories or other issues from around the state.
Amen. Glenn Morgan, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Keep up the great work, my friend. We'll have you on again.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Glenn Morgan, Citizens Alliance for Property Rights, and also WeTheGovern.com. If you haven't checked out his articles, they're phenomenal. He does a lot of primary source research and puts it up there and really, really loves to catch bureaucrats doing things that they should not be doing and exposing the corruption that does exist in government. And there's been so many whistleblowers, literally, that have listened to this show, especially when I've had Glenn on before, that have contacted us, and things have resulted just from that, changes in legislation and dramatic policy shifts because of that. In fact, electronic home monitoring was one of those things. We did the most reform in 20 years, and just a couple days ago, there was another abuse in regards to electronic home monitoring, but this time in regards to the companies that monitor and how they pay their taxes, and that is now being pushed back against, and the department is actually recognizing it maybe needs to relook it. So it's a great way to hold government accountable. If you have a story, contact me at Patriot Radio US on Facebook. Well, this is Matt Shea. Thank you very much for joining me today. May God bless all of you, and may he truly make this generation the greatest one.